Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. In this episode, I'm joined by Mark Gary. Mark's daughter Tessa was diagnosed with neuroblastoma when she was 14 months old in 2018. Now 6 and in school, Tessa is living a happy and normal life, and Mark is here to remind you to look to the future ahead. Mark talks about the treatment journey, the support of others, the difficult decision of treatment abroad, and the health anxiety that can live on. He also talks about how he processed this challenging time as a husband and dad. Mark, thank you so much for joining me and joining us all on Gold Ribbon Conversations to talk about Tessa's journey. Tessa, which we've just spoken about, was born in 2017, the same as my own daughter, and really was quite a young infant when diagnosed. Tell me, take me back to that time in terms of when did you start seeing a healthy 14-month-old give you signs and symptoms that maybe something is wrong?
Thank you, Sinead. It was went on over a few months in 2018. So she'd had stomach problems and issues, and we'd been in and out, kind of getting her checked out and being told, look, it's just normal cramps and issues and pains during the night and so forth. So yeah, look, she was obviously very young, and she couldn't tell us what was happening during 2018. My wife had kind of, as I said, been to a lot of doctors and been told, look, everything's fine, it's just normal issues, cramps and so forth, and pains and aches and so on. But I guess my wife was kind of reassured temporarily at times, and then, you know, was going back for more visits, just to, because it kept reoccurring, there kept being issues and so forth. And what ultimately happened was her eye became quite swollen. So this was the secondary cancer from her neuroblastoma coming out in her beneath her eye. And initially we were told when we brought her to one doctor that, look, not my wife sort of was really panicked at this stage, and she said to me that, you know, she felt her life was changing as she drove in with her that day, that she kind of knew her this wasn't good, and she had her suspicions that this could be a tumor beneath her eye. So this was in December 18. But the doctor said, no, it's not that at all, it's just an eye infection, just get some drops, or, you know, just a normal kind of prescription. But again, that didn't solve it. So that was leading up to the kind of Christmas in 2018. So just after Christmas 2018, my wife brought her back to the GP and said, look, this eye infection isn't going anywhere. It looks very swollen, and she was in really bad form, and just not happy at all. And her eye was very perturbant at that point. It just didn't look right. I think it was actually, believe it or not, the hairdresser came to the house to do my wife's hair, and she said to her, that just doesn't look like an eye infection to me. That just doesn't look right. So she brought Tessa to the local GP, And he was a young guy, and he said, look, he said, no, he said, that's not right. He said, if that was my child, I'd bring her straight into Temple Street. So we, you know, we brought her in that time at the Temple Street, and they initially said, look, we're going to run some tests and take her home and look, it should be fine. But then they rang up later that evening to say, look, no, you need to get back in here. We need to check this out more thoroughly and to have her inpatient. So we brought her back in, and we're talking to an English doctor that night, and he sort of said, yeah, look, the blood tests, you know, they're showing kind of warning signals in terms of the activity there. So, you know, I think he kind of broached the fact that, look, it could be a number of things, but it could be quite serious. And they were checking several things out. And I think it was the next day then that the doctor came in and looked, obviously I remember these things forever, you know, and they came in, a couple of doctors, and they said, look, we're very sorry to inform you that Tessa has cancer. And we're sending her over from Temple Street over to Crumlin. So, you know, you're kind of, you know, my wife was crying at the time, and, you know, I was going to be, Jesus Christ, you know, it comes as a shock, but by the same token, you're glad in a way that at least it's being diagnosed and you kind of know what it is, and you kind of, you know, you prepare yourself to deal with it. So, yeah, we decamped from there over to Crumlin, but yeah, look, obviously terribly difficult to see your daughter in distressed state, and particularly when her eye was sticking out so much, you know, she just looked terrible. It was horrific, really. But we went over to Crumlin anyway, so terribly nice over there. We spoke to some of the specialists, and I remember the surgeon came in and told us, look, he said, look, it's going to be an operation. He said, look, it's going to be a... He kind of played it down a little bit. It was an operation. He said, look, I'll just get in there and take out the tumor and so forth. And that was kind of reassuring to kind of hear that he wasn't kind of telling us it was going to be a terribly complex operation. But, you know, I think the reality was it obviously is, you know, operating on children with cancers and tumors, it is a difficult operation. But, you know, these guys are very experienced in what they do and so forth. But that was just one part of the treatment process, and we spoke to a consultant then after that, and look, they were all terribly helpful and terribly reassuring and great communicators in terms of how they explained the process and the familiarity with it. So, you know, they explained, look, it's going to be a long process. I think it was 18 months what Tessa went through in terms of, you know, the initial chemo, the surgery then to remove the tumor that she had, and yeah, just to see how she responded to that. And then obviously you move on at the later stage then to the various other aspects of frontline treatment, which, you know, involves immunotherapy and so forth. And, you know, you're asking a lot of questions as a parent. You're trying to understand how the process works and so on. But they explained it really well to us in Crumlin. You know, they broach it to you gently, and they kind of lead you through it, because it does take you time to kind of process it and to understand that you're dealing with the enormity of the whole thing, really. You know, it's like it's your worst nightmare, really. But yeah, look, they, you know, they're very cheerful and they're very helpful in terms of the staff there, the way they explain it to you. And yeah, you just have to buy into it, and kind of, you know, that gives you hope and so on. But yeah, look, a lot of it kind of comes from the fact that, you know, you kind of rely on each other and you help each other through it as well. And, you know, people are very supportive, and, you know, Irish people were very good to us, and indeed, you know, everyone really, you know, from around the world were very helpful to us. We went out fundraising and so forth in terms of when we kind of decided we want to kind of to do a clinical trial at a later stage. But yeah, like, I mean, it's, you know, it's the good humor of people and so on that get you through it. And it's kind of focusing on the day to day and kind of dealing with those aspects, and, you know, your own child as well, and your other children you have to think about as well, with your other children, young children. So, you know, life does go on, and you kind of deal with the enormity of all that and kind of getting through the regular day to day, and school goes on and so forth. So, you know, I kept working myself, so you're dealing with all that and the normalities and so on. But yeah, look, you're in kind of, you know, I suppose kind of emergency mode, really, in terms of, you know, going traveling back over to Crumlin. We were lucky that we lived quite close by, so we didn't have to avail of, you know, external accommodation. We'd come home to our own beds at night time, and one of the things that was really helpful was their friends and family helped us hugely in terms of, you know, I think it's, you know, just kind of helping us out with kind of staying there overnight and so on in the hospital at times, just to give you a break, which is hugely helpful, because you know, if you can get a night's sleep, it just means so much to you and kind of helps you keep the show on the road. So our people were incredibly helpful to us, and we'll always be grateful for that aspect of it, you know. So it's difficult to recount, obviously, and go through it again, but look, this is what people have to deal with. It's part of life, it's part of health and so forth. And, you know, it's kind of, you get through it. And thankfully, you know, Tess is in a place now where she's healthy and she's happy and she's enjoying school and so forth. And just a normal child, really, you know, and we're very fortunate to come through it all. But it's a traumatic time for parents, but it's amazing what you can handle and what you can deal with. It's the resilience of people. And look, we're no different to anybody else. It was all new to us, really. But we certainly found, you know, if you reached out to people, that they could help you, you know, just if, you know, doctors and so forth were really reassuring. And even if you had some kind of, you know, sometimes you might end up dealing with, you know, there might be the odd medical person who kind of frightens you a little bit, you know, like it can be quite stark, some of the language and so forth. And, you know, you might be a little bit, my God, you know, what's the impact of radiation on my child and their growth? And they were, you know, they have to kind of tell you the reality of it and sort of say, well, look, you may be dealing with growth issues and so on in the future. And it can be, you know, quite traumatizing, really, to kind of hear that. And you're kind of, geez, what does that mean for a daughter and so forth? And, you know, particularly when you're, you know, but other medical professionals would say, actually, well, no, keep it in perspective, you know, and it might not be as bad as that person is making out to you, because in a way they have to kind of tell you the worst case scenario in a way. So it's, you do have to, you know, put it in perspective and be really about the fundamentals of survival. You know, once you put it into that context, it kind of helps you process it and kind of deal with the day to day. And it's just like, yeah, look, let's just handle this as a process. Yeah. And to try to be as matter of fact about it as you can and realize, look, what's in your control and what's outside your control and what can you do? And you know, I mean, you're kind of grappling with things as a couple and so on, in terms of, look, you know, what are you trying to achieve here with your daughter? You're trying to, you know, give her the best quality of life, give her the best chance out of all this. And that's really only achieved by going through the process and kind of getting through the stages. But, you know, when you're trying to do research yourself and so on, there's a huge amount of information out there on the internet. And some people will be telling you, you know, their own interpretation of events and so on. But you really have to, you know, try to listen to the doctors as best you can and try to take in the information. And it can be hard too, because it kind of, a lot builds up to these kind of meetings and so on with doctors, whereby you're trying to absorb a huge amount of technical information, medical information, to absorb that and think, what does this mean? And, you know, you're in your own mind, you're kind of building up to this meeting, and what happens if they say this and what happens if they say that? It can be good. Sometimes you can't always both be there at the meeting. So it's just one party taking it all in. And, you know, it's, you do have to try to be as level headed as possible. But of course, that's terribly difficult when it's your own child at stake in the situation. But yeah, look, you kind of, you know, they're terribly good at explaining these things, and particularly anybody who works in this kind of in the area of pediatrics and oncology, you know, they're incredibly good communicators in terms of these difficult and you know, because they're dealing with parents' emotions and so on, and parents' emotions are quite heightened, obviously and understandably, at these times. So I certainly found, you know, that they talked us through it very well. We were dealing with you know, really committed people, and you know, I mean, they were you know, it was just vital to kind of get that as a parent, to kind of, you know, to help you get through the journey and kind of, you know, they injected a lot of humor into the conversations at times, at the right times as well, you know, and they kind of, you know, you kind of got to remember that, look, it's okay to kind of, you know, to feel upset and to kind of, to try to process all these emotions, because it's, you know, frankly, it's terrifying at the time, you know, in terms of the enormity of what you're dealing with. But
and that itself is a whole other recovery, the emotional recovery. So, you know, you've entrusted her physical recovery to this team of doctors. But for the family and the wider family, of course, there is a longstanding emotional trauma that is happening right now. How you were dealing with it, how you found that, you know, that, you know, you're speaking quite like that you were able to lean into being kind of a rational thinker and what can you control and looking at facts? And was that always who you were, or did you find yourself in this experience just having to, that's all you can do?
Yeah, I think you do. And look, my wife is a very positive person, and you know, like, I was, you kind of rely on each other as a couple in that way, and on others too, friends and family, to kind of keep things in perspective. And you know, yeah, you know, that kind of, you know, like, she was very upbeat and positive. And remember at one stage she was asking the doctor, look, am I kind of foolishly so, you know, should I be more, you know, kind of, you know, preparing myself for the worst or whatever. But yeah, I think she kind of found this, look, was kind of being positive and kind of clinging on to the, you know, because you just don't, ultimately, you don't know how it's going to turn out. You do have to just try to in a way, almost kind of assume that, you know, it's like anything in life, you have to kind of, you just don't know how it's going to go. So you have to deal with what's in front of you in that particular day, in that particular week, until the next kind of meeting, or, you know, you get some information, and you just don't know ultimately how a patient or a child is going to respond to certain things. But yeah, I mean, yeah, look, you know, everyone has different personalities and comes at this in different ways. But yeah, look, it does force you to kind of adapt and to be rational, I suppose. And that does help. You know, you see the doctors in terms of they're dealing with this day to day. And, you know, look, it's obviously you're going to have emotions, and that's going to happen. And you have to process those and deal with those and move through it and so on. And some days you'll have good days, and some days you'll have bad days. And, you know, I remember my consultant came in to us when we're going through stem cell treatment, which I think was the hardest part of it. So that was 6 weeks where she was in-house, and you know, she was in the hospital the whole time, and we had to be there kind of around the clock. And as I said, like, we got huge support at the time. Thankfully, we didn't have to go through it at the time of COVID, which would have been even more difficult for parents because they couldn't have those supports. So we had some friends and family came in who kind of stayed with Tessa to give us a break and kind of give us a night's sleep at times, because it can be noisy in the hospital to kind of get a night's sleep. And you know, that was hugely helpful to us to kind of be able to go home to our own beds and kind of get a night's rest, because it just, you know, it nourishes you and helps you kind of come back and deal with the uncertainty and the anxiety of, you know, the information coming in, just, you know, test results and the next challenge. But I think that was definitely the most difficult thing for us, was stem cell, when she was in-house, as I said, for 6 weeks. And like, it's high dose chemo that they're giving the child. But I mean, just Tessa was so ill during that. It's appalling, you know, how sick they take the child to death's door to come back. But that's what has to be done with the cancer, because the risk with neuroblastoma is that the cancer comes back, and that's what they want to avoid. But you're really in a bad space if the cancer comes back. So they try to hit it with everything initially, trying to get rid of it. So your child has to get really sick. So it was terrible watching her. And I remember we couldn't bring the other children in to visit her, but they came to visit her outside the window. But she was actually too sick to even look at them. So like, Tessa was, you know, she'd be sitting on your knee and she wouldn't even look around at the other kids. They'd be waving at the window saying hello to her and so on. So yeah, look, it's, you know, it's terrible, you know, to kind of see them that ill. But that's the kind of the process that your child has to go through to come out the other side and to bounce back. And kids are amazingly resilient. Like, they just surprise you how they can endure these things. I mean, like, no adult, that's what they said to us at the start, like, the treatment, you know, no adult could endure the level of treatment and survive that these kids go through. And thankfully, you know, that they're actually so young and growing, and their bodies are so regenerative that they can absorb this and come to the other side of it. So I know that was kind of a scary part for us initially, that kind of, you know, even to kind of embark on stem cell and so on. And the doctors talk you through it very effectively and kind of reassuringly to kind of say, look, it's going to be hard. It's going to be very hard, but, you know, it gives you like a higher percentage outcome and chance. And that was something that I kind of looked at, you know, numbers are kind of my field, you know, as an accountant. But you know, that was something I always looked at. Well, look, we do this, what kind of percentage outcome, what's the percentage outcome and the improvement that this will give? So something like immunotherapy, thankfully we're fortunate to have that in Ireland, that aspect of kind of at the end of treatment, kind of, I think it, I forget the exact statistic, but I think it's 10 to 20% of an increase in survival rate if you have this. So and those particular drugs. All these little things, you kind of look in at and you're reassured that, look, it's a difficult process, but sometimes it doesn't turn out to be as difficult as you fear. Each child kind of finds different stages more difficult than others, and it can depend on their age. You know, we were fortunate in a way, bizarre way, with Tessa. Like, she was so young, and that was, you know, terrible in its own way, because you feel like, God, she's had no life before, she's been, you know, very little before she's been cast into all this. But that was to her benefit as well, because she didn't remember, she doesn't remember a lot of this, and that's also that she wasn't scared of it. So, you know, she was, you know, she got a lot of fun out of the nurses and the doctors, and, you know, they were very good with her. And like anybody who works in that area, you know, they're so good with kids, and just, you know, their positivity and so on is great, and just gives you kind of strength, really, to kind of, you know, that kind of bit of fun and a bit of banter and so on. And, you know, it's just brilliant, you know, at these low moments to help you get through these, get through these aspects of the treatment and the trial. But but yeah, look, thankfully it all went well for us. And at one point then, you know, during it, you know, we were looking at kind of what's the options here, the different things. That's where we looked at the whole aspect of, look, do we do a clinical trial? And in Tessa's case, we decided to, and look, you know, there's not huge evidence out there either way, but we decided, look, on the basis of probability, that we kind of looked at Sloan Kettering, you know, in the States, and we decided to fundraise for that, to send her over there to do a clinical trial over there to help stop the cancer coming back. And we worked with Solving Kids Cancer. We went to one of their conferences, which we found helpful as well. And look, it's terribly technical and so on. You listen to all the experts, but informative as well. So, and all these treatments kind of evolve. One of the aspects we found, and I'm sure most parents do, is kind of the different treatment that goes on in the States versus what goes on in Europe. So there's different medical centers and different kind of approaches to medication and cancer treatment and so forth. And you're trying to assess, well, look, what's better or what's worse? Or, you know, do you go for tandem stem cell treatment versus, you know, the one we went for, which is single transplant in terms of stem cells? So there's all these different aspects, and they do it differently, the different protocols in the States versus Europe. And you're trying to process all this and understand it. And, you know, you might have questions around radiology as well, and kind of this proton treatment and this kind of a wide beam treatment as well. So you're, again, at all these stages, you're looking at this and you're asking questions, and the medical guys are giving you advice. And, you know, as a parent, you kind of might take it away and I've read about this online and maybe this would be better. And you're trying to rationalize all this and understand it. It can be terrible, obviously terribly difficult and challenging as a lay person and so on. But thankfully,
a lot of decision making, you know,
a lot of decision making, where you feel like, well, you know, what's my role in this? And, you know, do I challenge this or do I go with this? And you're trying to, you know, as a couple, and trying to come to an agreed way forward for your child and the best treatment program. But thankfully, the protocol that they put her on here in Ireland was very good. And as I said, look, you may have moments of doubt, but you might meet one professional where you're like, oh God, I don't know, maybe that's quite worrying, that radiation part of it, and how's that going to affect her and so forth. But you kind of reconcile yourself to these things, you know, and you sort of say, well, look, okay, this is something we're going to have to do, and there's a risk involved with it, but the benefits are worth the risk in terms of, but yeah, look, it can stir up things in you, you know, emotions. You know, it kind of brings you back to your own parents perhaps being sick, and, you know, you're going into hospitals and radiation treatment, or, you know, dealing with cancer and so forth. You know, it's obviously a very common disease for older people. And, you know, many of us in our own lives have seen that for older people. Try to kind of get your head around your own little child going through all that. It's quite, you know, it's a bit of a mind shift, mm-hmm. really, to cope with it all. But look, you know, what can you say? You just have to kind of put your trust in the process and kind of work your way through it as best you can. But it can be mind-blowing, all right. And I know that, you know, like it's hugely dependent on how the treatment process goes, and, you know, particularly if the setbacks and so on along the way. But I suppose one thing I'd kind of say to parents, having, like, not even necessarily your own daughter, like, we were very, very fortunate that Tessa responded well to the chemo. Like, that was the key thing for her. She was hugely responsive to chemotherapy, and it kind of cleansed her body of the cancer. And just, she was very fortunate with that. Whereas I know other parents who had their children had neuroblastoma, and they weren't as fortunate, and kind of they had spots and so on. But I suppose one of the things that we found from knowing their child's journeys was that in actual fact, they got clear later in the process, and some of them had to go to, say, Barcelona to get, after all the treatment in Ireland, the front line, the 18 months, the full protocol, there was still a spot and so on, but they went to Barcelona and got some, let's say some, you know, they might have got a mixture of, say, chemo and immunology, or a bit of, perhaps they might have got some radiation treatment and so on. And that actually worked then in terms of solving, you know, solving the issue. And then some of them did a protocol in the States and some of them didn't. And, you know, in both cases that we know of, they worked out in both cases. And that's, I suppose, one thing to kind of bear in mind is that every child's journey in this is different. As a parent, because you haven't gone through it before, you're not seeing this all the time, this, it can be terribly scary to kind of, you know, you feel, will they ever come back from it? But they do, you know, they can surprise you, you know, the human will to live is just, it's amazing, thankfully.
You described, kind of get you through that. You described that moment so well of how they have to bring them. They have to bring them to their lowest in order to bring them back.
Yes.
When did you start seeing that glimmer of hope returning, that turnaround moment of, okay, she's coming back to us now?
Yeah. And I think stem cell, I think, was obviously the lowest point for Tessa. You know, obviously it's hard when you see them lose their hair, but you kind of, I was prepared for that. Mm. You know, I kind of said, look, we know that's going to happen. But certainly with stem cell, they're just so sick. They're so small and they're so skinny and they're just lying on the bed and they're bald. They've got a tube up their nose and they're getting fed that way and they're getting sick and the smell of it. And, you know, like they're like they almost go back to a newborn stage again, the fragility. But I remember the consultant calling in and he, you know, because you're dealing with a different team during stem cell, like your own consultant kind of hands you over to a stem cell team. And I think that actually works well in a way because it's almost like you kind of need different voices sometimes to help you through it and kind of at different times. But I remember the consultant, Michael Capra, came in and like it was just at a particularly low moment myself, kind of trying to process it and deal with it and see her there. He just said, look, hang in there. You kind of gave me a fist bump and he said, listen, you know, hang tough there. She'll get through this and she will get better. You know, and that kind of helps, you know, because look, it's raw and it's difficult, but yeah, and it's not immediate, like it's slow and you're constantly saying, listen, even if she gets through this, you know, it could still come back to cancer and it could only be a temporal situation. So you're dealing with all these, grappling with these difficult thoughts and, you know, the enormity of the situation, but yeah, you just, as best you can, you got to fight for hope. And it can be a difficult thing because, you know, it's not necessarily the doctor's place to kind of give you that hope because they're trying to be realistic and, you know, they don't want to get your hopes up and because there can be reversals and setbacks and it's kind of a roller coaster of emotion, the whole thing that you're going through. So they're trying to keep you, I think, to a degree and, you know, to help you get through this and deal with it and process it and believe in it and the process and so on. It's a bit like you say, you know, it's kind of talking to other parents, but that can be hard too because other parents are going through a slightly different journey to your own. They might, you know, you're in the hospital, but they could have a different form of cancer, these children who are on the ward and so forth, or at a different point in their journey. And, you know, it's, you know, parents are grappling with their own situation. And like you're seeing these poor people. And I mean, you know, you're kind of saying like, Jesus, I mean, like, how can this happen? You know, and you're dealing with all this stuff, the why of it all, you know, but like, that's just life. And you're kind of saying, you know, it's the enormity of the situation. But look, it's happening all around the world. You know, we see it today and, you know, life is terribly challenging at times. And, you know, into everyone's life, you know, you have these moments and you just got to kind of get through it as best you can for your kids. But as I said, you know, it's I think you get to that point and you kind of come through it, but again, you've still got the anxiety of this and things could go wrong down the line. So don't get too high, you don't get too low, and you got to kind of deal with it. But you kind of get into that cycle of kind of a routine of, listen, you know, I'm in the hospital now, I'm at home for the kids, I'm doing stuff, I'm working, you know, whatever you have to do to kind of get through that.
Childhood Cancer Ireland is a charity founded by parents and survivors who have walked this path and are now dedicating their time to supporting you.
They know what it's like to feel isolated, confused, scared, and alone. And they are here to listen and provide peer-to-peer support to parents of children, adolescents, and young adults with cancer. They know what they needed, and they know how valuable it is to connect with someone who shares what you are feeling, thinking, and fighting. You can access essential information about this peer-to-peer support on our website, childhoodcancer.ie. To help us to continue our services, please text GOLD to 50300 and donate €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more. Did you find it easy to compartmentalize like that? That if you were in work mode, that you could actually focus on work? When you were with your other kids having fun, you could actually, you know, tap into that.
I don't know whether you'd ever, I don't know whether you're ever in that fun stage, but you do need a break, you know, parents need a break and whatever, you know, a bit of a distraction can be good. So even the routine of work was in a way helpful, I found, to kind of, you know, and people are good, like they kind of, you know, the support and, the, you know, just how you're getting on and stuff like that, you know, it helps you kind of process it and explain it and bounce ideas off people and kind of get their views. And it's amazing, you know, like people will say, well, actually, you know, I know somebody whose son or daughter went through this or something similar, and this was my experience and so on. And sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not, but you know, people do their best, or they actually say, I know somebody, someone to talk to. So, you know, what I found helpful was somebody might know a doctor and they'd say, listen, I'm going to get you, there's a surgeon here, or there's a, you know, a doctor here, and they have a word with them. And, you know, they might deal with adults, but they'll know, so, you know, but they'll actually talk to you about radiology and how it works and kind of reassure you, you know, they're not in the process with you, but they'll kind of help you put your mind at ease. So she can kind of say, well, okay, look, she might be a little bit shorter than the norm here, but that's okay. Or, you know, there might be some, like Tessa had to have a kidney removed during the surgery when they went in to do that. And, you know, that was a hugely stressful time, kind of the hours of that surgery. You're kind of waiting, you know, like it's, you know, but, you know, the skill that they show, you know, they do a phenomenal job in terms of, you know, trying to operate on kids and so forth. It's mind-blowing in terms of the specialization that they have to do there. But she lost the kidney, and you're kind of going, well, what does that mean for the next stage, and how does this impact? But thankfully, like, again, humans can, you know, you kind of say, well, okay, adults can deal with it, but she's young and she has to go through this treatment. But that, you know, you listen to the advice and they say, yeah, look, go with this, this is the way to go, and you have to get as much of the cancer, the tumor out as possible and so forth. But just to digress slightly, and I think it's probably worth mentioning, like, you know, just in terms of the whole journey, like in terms of what you say, like, not to get too high, not to get too low, or like there was a later stage where Tessa had gone through all her treatment, but she went away down the country, and she came back and she became terribly ill. She got E. coli, and it turned into a further worse version of that. But she got incredibly sick from that, where she was back in Crumlin, and like she was back at that stage where she wasn't keeping their food. She was getting incredibly ill, and they tried everything and they couldn't really solve this E. coli issue. They reckon it kind of comes from the dirt in the water and bacteria in the water down the country, where maybe a splash of water got into her mouth, we think, potentially from like a lake down in the Midlands. Or else it could have been as simple as, you know, something, a piece of meat that wasn't partially cooked from a barbecue. We don't think it was that. But again, we couldn't really even tie down what it was. She got incredibly unwell from that. And like one of the consultant who was looking after her at that stage was kind of saying, oh, and this was after she'd kind of completed frontline and completed a year back and forth traveling to the States and completed her maintenance treatment in Sloan Kettering. And this doctor was like, geez, we've tried everything with Tessa here. You know, this, like, I found myself in a room again with a consultant. And I said, like, where is this conversation going? And like, it was kind of getting late. Remember, it was kind of getting late outside and the room was kind of dark. And like, you know, you're listening to the conversation. The conversation's slowly becoming darker as well in a way. And you're kind of like, where are these words leading? What am I hearing here? Like, she was, you know, a kind of a very experienced consultant, and she was kind of saying, listen, we're going to have to try potentially a clinical trial here. And I was like, oh my God. And literally, you know, talk about turning around. But the next day, thankfully, before she had to go on this clinical trial to solve the E. coli problem, because she couldn't keep anything down, she wasn't keeping any food in her system, from this E. coli, and it was just like stem cell all over again. But it was literally just random. It was nothing. They reckon it was nothing to do with anything. It was, and it does happen to kids, a lot of kids in Ireland, that they get this E. coli infection, and it can just worsen, and the child, she couldn't get rid of it. But thankfully, literally the next day, she started turning a corner, started keeping a bit more down, and kind of improved from there. But like, what were the odds? There you find, you know, you could think to yourself, oh, I'll get you the cancer treatment, and God, it's somewhat important to get you the cancer treatment. But there you go, you can end up in a situation whereby something random happens. You know, you take her to a lake down the country, you take her camping or something, it's some little thing, like totally out of the blue, and you're kind of saying, listen, you got to live your best life with your child and kind of make sure she enjoys herself as much as she can. But something like that can just happen with children. It's, you know, and unfortunately it happens all the time with kids, you know, something serious from a health perspective can occur, and you could find yourself back in a hospital, back in a very serious condition. And again, we were just fortunate that she came out of that, and thankfully she's never been hospitalized again for some serious issue like that. But it can be scary, and you're always a bit kind of, geez, you know, how will she respond, or what does the future hold, or what are the side effects from the serious treatment that she's gone through, you know, and the chemotherapy and so forth.
It's almost like you were plunged right back into that fear again.
And
that feeling of security that you had when she'd finished her treatment, that, okay, this is behind us. This is a reminder that actually,
The fragility. Yes.
The fragility, any threat.
Human life. Yes.
Yeah, can reoccur.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's extraordinary, really. And so
how is she now?
She's thankfully, she's in good form. She's in senior infants, and she's having great fun with her brothers and sisters. They're, you know, she's one sister and two older brothers, and they're all very good to her, and they have a great relationship. And listen, she's a very happy child. She always was. But no, she goes to speech and language to kind of, you know, she probably found kind of talking and kind of speech and language kind of difficult to keep up with her peers and so forth. But we've been, you know, she's been in speech and language for a couple of years now, and kind of goes, you know, most weeks to help her with that. And even when she was in play school, there were a little bit, God, we're not sure whether she's ready or not for school, because developmentally she wasn't quite hitting her milestones. But we took the view that, you know, socially she was good, and that, like, we didn't want to hold her back too much in case, you know, she had to go into treatment again, and didn't want to fall in too far behind her peers. So we put her into school, but we have to support her more and kind of work more with her outside. And thankfully my wife is a teacher, you know, and she helps her with that a lot. And we do some work at home with her to kind of make sure we're kind of reinforcing the learnings of speech and language and so forth, and keeping up with kind of the class as best she can. So thankfully she's doing well and progressing and so forth and enjoying life. And that's all you really want for your kids, to try to, you know, you can't control your children, anybody's health, you know, our loved ones. We all just try to, you know, look after them as best we can. But thankfully she's doing great and progressing well and having living her best life, really, which is good. So yeah, look, you know, it kind of puts things into perspective for you and gives you a different slant in life in terms of, you know, what's important and what's not. And it's not the fancy things in life, it's the simple things that are everything, really. And yeah, you know, I'm just being, you know, you're just grateful that your kids are able to, you know, hang out together and have fun, and they didn't have to go through what unfortunately so many families have to go through, which is, you know, the bereavement of a child in the family. You know, and you're just eternally grateful for that. Like, you know, people sort of say, you know, do you have survivor's guilt and so on? And that's something you just have to process and kind of be grateful for. But, you know, this is another thing that kind of happens to parents as well, almost kind of to process this. All these different emotions that you go through on this journey. But we're just eternally grateful that we're at this point. We all have kind of reserves of strength that we probably don't appreciate until we're put in this situation. You know, I'm no different to anybody else. It's like the human body, you know. Look, I'm not saying it's easy, you know, I'm not saying you ever fully sort of put these things behind you. Like, it's traumatic, but, you know, lots of things in life are traumatic and difficult and hard to bear. But, you know, eventually, you know, just time does help you kind of absorb it and kind of progress, and conversations help, and talking to people helps, and so on. But everybody processes it slightly differently. And but yeah, look, as I said, you know, people are good, and I think, you know, Irish people are good like that. They, you know, they're good at kind of, just from what I've seen, and kind of communicate with other parents overseas and so forth. Like, it's like, we talk to a lot of, you know, American parents and so on, have been through it and so on. And, you know, like, people are good and organizations are good. You know, the companies like Aer Lingus helped us, you know, when we're going to the States and so forth, like getting flights and so on. And, you know, it's, you know, it just means a lot, you know, the kind of the human touch at times.
Sometimes, you know, the worst of experiences gives you an opportunity to see good in things. Yeah, and in people.
It's surprising, you know, people and organizations can really surprise you, you know, in terms of how generous they can be and how considerate. And, you know, like, when my wife was flying to the States with Tessa for the clinical trial, she was over quite a lot, kind of back and forth during that. And, you know, like the stewardesses and so on, like, you know, word of mouth, you know, and people would just, they, you know, they look after you, kind of really kind to you and so on. Mm. It's just, it's great to hear that, you know, that. Particularly as a father, you know, when your wife and your child or sick child are kind of traveling overseas, it's, you know, the people are looking after them and so on. And, you know, it was quite a big step to kind of to take on that. And, like, I know the doctors in Ireland were kind of saying, listen, you know, you don't need to put yourself through this. You've been through enough. Don't kind of take that on. And I said, look, we've had the conversation. I said, look, my wife's mind is made up. She just doesn't want to leave any stone unturned in this process. And look, it is Sloan Kettering at the end of the day. And if they believe in this, well, look, you know, and look, there's a fee involved, there's money involved, and we had to kind of fundraise for that. But look, that was the step. Look, it's not straightforward to do that, but we had great support, and, you know, people were magnificent with helping us with that. But, you know, it actually went very smoothly, thank God, and it all went well. But, you know, it's almost like, do you have the strength to kind of bear up and take another step on another chunk? And you kind of take that decision as whether you do or whether you don't. But it can be enormous decisions and difficult to grapple with as a non-medical person to try to assess all these things. But all you can do is kind of do some research. But equally, I know, like, there's another guy I know who kind of went through all this with his child, and he probably didn't get, you know, it's kind of almost emotional about it. It certainly seemed to me about it, but it was kind of rational about it and kind of processed all this and took the steps and came through it. And, you know, it's amazing. You know, some people can really, it's extraordinary how people can go through this and be relatively, to the external side of it, relatively unscathed almost in terms of kind of getting through it and coming out the other side. But everybody's different, you know, different personalities and so forth. But yeah, look, some deal with it easier than others, and it depends on the journey as you go through all these treatments.
I don't think there's any one right way other than feeling what it is that you need to feel and leaning into what it is that you need to do, whether that is distraction or whether it is work or whether it is just a piece of normal life or asking for help. But I think that there's no bravery, you know, here. What we need to do is feel the emotion as it comes, because the fear of what you're living deserves these feelings, you know.
They are warranted, and absolutely, I totally endorse what you're saying, Sinead. I mean, it's to take a break, you know. For me, it was kind of getting out and having a game of tennis, going for a run. A bit of exercise, I think, is hugely beneficial in life. You know, and it's terribly hard to do when you're exhausted and you're run down and you're stressed and you're trying to keep going and you don't want to, you know, but certainly trying to maintain some of those routines and getting out, get some fresh air, even some daylight, a bit of a walk and so on is hugely beneficial, because at the end of the day, you need to be able to hop in that car and drive to the hospital. So, like, that's a really important message, I think, you know, as a carer, kind of, to convey that to parents who are going through this, that they have to look after themselves. And particularly, I think women in particular, you know, men are probably a little bit better at that. Maybe perhaps kind of, you know, sort of kind of dealing with certain things are kind of, you know, locking down, trying to be unemotional or kind of not as emotional about it. But for women, that they sometimes, I see it with my own wife, you know, she wouldn't kind of be eating right or so on, but I'd be kind of conscious to make sure I was eating and kind of keep my strength up. I remember, you know, when my own parents were sick over the years, kind of you do have to look after yourself, kind of eating a nutritious diet and eating healthily, because, you know, it's very easy to kind of, when you're in the hospital and you eat this junk food available there and so forth, but you try to eat a healthy diet, because as a carer, to look after a sick patient, you got to be healthy too. And you got to be as best you can, you know, to get your night's sleep where you can, and not to feel guilty about that, that, you know, someone else might be minding your child. Like, that's what, that people want to help you. I think that was an important message that, you know, someone said to me at the start of all this, because, you know, at the start of it, when you're just reeling and you're like, Jesus Christ, I mean, how are we going to deal with this? And you don't know what's kind of, how the health system is going to treat you, and you don't know how other people are going to react, and just the enormity of it. And it seems so bleak at the start. I remember, you know, the chair of the chairman of our trust that we set up for Tessa, David Hall, said that to me. He said, listen, you know, people want to help. They just want to find a way to help. And it's just about letting them know that. And that's what other people are great at, you know, kind of just helping support you and kind of getting that message out. Listen, you know, the family needs this or the family needs that. I think, you know, certainly one thing that was hugely helpful at the start, like, people were kind of bringing meals to the house and so on, because you literally don't have time to cook for the kids or to do washing and so on. And just those little things, you know, like, kind of someone coming to kind of dropping a meal into you and so on, is hugely helpful, because at the start you're literally in a state of shock. Your body, like, you're frozen. I mean, you know, just being like, it's kind of like you've been in a car accident almost. The levels of stress that hit you, you know, just from head to toe, it's just like you're under attack from a virus yourself or something. But when, you know, people are giving you meals, and that helps you, it restores you, it kind of nourishes you and so forth. So, like, but just to take a break and so on, I think that's important message. And as I said, particularly for, I think, mothers in a way, because, you know, like, the mothers are often the primary carers in this, just to kind of, you know, not to feel guilty in any way about taking a break or, you know, going to the gym or going for a walk or a cycle, or just something to kind of clear your headspace, because you need that for your child, because you're going to have long days and tiring days and exhausted days. It's a marathon, like, it's an 18-month frontline treatment. So it's, you know, and it's exhausting. So I definitely, you know, any kind of help or support, like, be open to that and allow people to help you. And everybody helps in different ways. I think that was another important message that I learned during this. And, like, people will help in different ways. Some people will kind of, you know, emotionally, financially, with resources, food, cleaning, washing stuff, you know, whatever little way, or giving you lifts, or giving your kids lifts to activities so that they can, you know, continue on in a normal life, that their lives aren't too badly affected, or kind of advice on kind of a medical standpoint, or, like, to have friends, you know, people want to help out in some way, and their own lives are busy too. So, kind of just to be open to that, and to kind of to be understanding, you know, with people's contributions, I suppose, and how they feed into that. So, yeah, look, all these things, you know, it's all part of the journey, but
they all
can't
matter.
Feel like life is sped up in these years, and life is lived very quickly. A lot happens in those years, but you got to just, I suppose, it's like a roller coaster, really. You just got to grip on and get through it, and
that when your kids are well, they also need well parents at the end of this also. And I think that's such an important message that you have, that we actually haven't really covered often before, but really the importance of keeping yourself as well as you possibly can throughout, and whether that is just talking and eating and exercising and just taking that time. But the family unit, normality can return, and processing it in whichever way you possibly can, as you go through it, is so important. And that message of accepting help, just, people do want to help. They don't want to see you in pain, and they love our children as much as we do. And accepting help can be a huge learning curve for adults. We're not great at it, but in these times of severe vulnerability, often that's really when we see that it is a community of parents and as you said, like, companies and brands and just kind people. They are everywhere, and let them in. Your strength has inspired many today, honestly. Honestly, this conversation is immensely immensely supportive for anybody that does need to hear it. And I know it is hard to look back on those days. So with gratefulness, I am saying thank you for joining us, for taking yourself and us back to those times, but to also sharing that there can be hope and there can be that life ahead where normality can resume and the light can be let back in. Thank you.
Yes. No, thank you, Sinead.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.